Right, good morning, everybody. And thank you, Carrie, for the wonderful song service. It's great to see all of you here. We've got quite a few of you here, and it's wonderful to see all of you. If you haven't been with us throughout the month of September, we've been walking through the book of Daniel, and we're going to conclude that today. We've been walking through the book of Daniel, and we've been asking ourselves what it might look like to live in exile, to live in a foreign land. And what we mean by that is, what does it mean to live in a land that doesn't know God? Right? What does it mean to live in a land of great pride and great power, but a land that has forgotten God and often spits in His face, as Daniel and his friends experience, and as many of us experience every day? And so we've been walking through the book of Daniel, and we've been asking ourselves questions like, what does it look like to draw boundaries, right? What does it look like to exist in our world but not completely conform to its image, right? And we've asked, like, what does it look like to speak truth in our world? And what kind of truth are we given to speak? How are we supposed to live and to spread the word of God? And just last week, as we were in Daniel chapter 3, I believe, we asked the question, okay, what are the consequences of speaking truth in our world? Because sometimes, as we live our life as Christians, it causes us to land in precarious situations, in dangerous situations. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego experienced that just last week as they wound up in the furnace. But as they were in the furnace, as they were in the fire, they found themselves met with the Son of God who preserved them in that situation. And so this morning, as we conclude, what I'd like to do is turn to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. Now, what some of you thought initially, as you saw this slide, is, that must be a typo. He must mean Daniel chapter 6, right? And some of you now, as I'm speaking, think to yourself, oh, I didn't know we had a Daniel chapter 7, right? Because most of the time what we do when we study Daniel is we love to study the first six books, and then the last six books get really weird. They get very strange because Daniel starts to have all sorts of visions and things, and when we have VBSs, right, we do all of the first half of Daniel, and then we don't wade into the Daniel 7 through 12 waters. But I'm going to challenge us to do that this morning. We'll be looking at Daniel chapter 7. And before we do this, I'm sorry I do this so much, by the way, but I'm going to show you two pictures here, two paintings. This is going to communicate something important to us here. This is what I'd like to do, if you just bear with me. I'm going to show you two paintings by Pablo Picasso that will help kind of illustrate what we're going to be doing this morning. Okay, here's the first one. Oh, no. Yeah, that probably wasn't me. Okay, this is the first one. This is a painting Pablo Picasso did of his mother, right? This is a portrait of his mother that Pablo Picasso painted. Does anybody want to guess how old he was? 15. 15. So, this Mother's Day, as you await a gift from your 15-year-old, this is the standard. This is the bar, okay? So start working now. He painted this when he was 15, and I don't know what Picasso's mother looks like. I've never met her, but probably looks something like that, right? This is a realistic painting. Now, what's interesting about this is that most of the time when we think of Pablo Picasso, if you ever think of Pablo Picasso, if you ever hear his name mentioned, you don't think of paintings like this. You think of paintings like this next one. Here. Okay, this is called Woman Weeping, or the Weeping Woman. Okay, and he painted this when he was 56. Now, what's interesting about this painting is that when we look at this progression, right, I think what we're inclined to think is like, oh, he got worse, right? Because this looks nothing like, you know, the weeping, you know, whoever this was, like, people didn't used to look like this, right, you know? This probably is a little bit abstract, right? But what's interesting is like when we look at these, if we'll go back to the first one here, yeah, it's like if you can paint this, right? If you can do this, why on earth would you paint this? This next one. Yeah. Why would you do that, right? This doesn't make any sense. It's very interesting. And what this means is that when abstract painters, right, when they paint something abstract, they're not doing it because they're terrible at painting, right, like most of us may think. They're doing it because this mode, right, this way of painting communicates something that's deeper, right? And there are many ways to look at this, but this is a woman who's crying. And I think you'd have to admit, as you look at it, you know, it's very sort of disfigured, it's broken up, right? There are all sorts of sharp lines breaking through it. It looks sort of like shattered glass, right? And there's something about painting it this way that almost makes it look more sad, don't you think? I think that. Maybe you don't think that. I say all of this to say, the Bible is not a book, really. It's a collection of books. It's a library of books. And as we get into Daniel chapter 7, part of what we're doing is we are walking into the abstract gallery in the library, okay? And there are things that are communicated in these last few chapters, and there are things communicated in Revelation and other places of prophecy that seem very strange, that seem very maybe even daunting or confusing, right, or challenging. But all of those things are meant to convey a deeper meaning, and we're gonna get to that. So if we could go back to like the first original slide, I won't leave this up while we read and frighten you. But we're gonna start reading in Daniel chapter 7, and then I'm just gonna maybe give us some things to think about here. Daniel chapter 7, we're gonna begin in chapter 7, verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. And Daniel declared, "I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirred up the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one like a bear. It was raised up on one side and it had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And it was told, arise, devour much flesh. After this I looked and behold, another, like a leopard, with 4 wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had 4 hands, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, terrifying and dreadful, and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth that devoured and broke in pieces, and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which 3 of the 1st horns were plucked up by its root. And behold, in this horn were 3 eyes, the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. And as I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head was pure wool. His throne was fiery flames. Its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire had issued and came forth from before him. 1,000,000 served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. And I looked then because the sound of the great words and that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed, and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days, and he was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom is one that shall not be destroyed. Now, before we get on with the rest of our study here, I'd like to just do a brief plug for VBS. I don't know who's in charge of VBS next year, if it's Lauren, but Lauren, think of the crafts we could do with Daniel chapter 7. Think of the snacks and the skits, there's so much material. It'd be good. It's strange, isn't it? It's very strange. And luckily, for much of Daniel chapter 7, we don't have to guess about what it's about, because the Bible just tells us what it's about. In the last half of that chapter, they tell us very specifically. But I'd like to look at one thing here first. We're going to look at the beasts and their dominion. We're going to look at the Ancient of Days and the Son of Man. So first of all, as Daniel has this vision, the first thing that he sees are four different types of beasts rising out of the earth. And they're very mean, they're vicious, right? And they tear people apart, and the people that they don't tear apart, they stomp on, right? They're destructive, and they're strong, and they're mighty. And Daniel, later, in Daniel chapter 7, he tells us outright, what these are. In verse 17, he said, "These four great beasts are four kings who shall arise out of the earth," right? These are four kingdoms, right? These are four earthly establishments, right? These are kingdoms. But the question that I ask when I look at this, and a question that I think maybe reveals something deeper for us, is why are they depicted as beasts, you know? And think back, can we go back to the weird Picasso painting for a second? Right? Why paint like this, right? Why depict them as beasts? Because if they're kings, why doesn't God give Daniel a vision of just four kings, right? Why beasts? And the reason for this, I think, is that the word here, of course, if you didn't know, Daniel, the book of Daniel is written in two different languages. The first chapter is written in Hebrew, and then the two through seven are written in Aramaic, and then the last part is written in Hebrew again. And so it's a different language, but the word here that's used for beast is the word, I gotta build up some spit, it's the word cheva, which is really close to the Hebrew word cheya, which is the word for beast that we see, and we'll go over to the next slide here. One of the first places this shows up is here, in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heaven, and over the cheva, and over all the earth, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." This is where this is used. And so just bear with me for a second. As we've been walking through the book of Daniel, we've been talking about these kingdoms. We've been talking about things that we can give our lives to, and that these things typically chew us up and spit us out. Right? All of us are given a choice as to what we can dedicate our lives to. And the issue is that most of the things that we dedicate our lives to, the whether they be nations, or whether they be companies, or whether they be hobbies, or whatever it is, whatever we're chasing after, they are things that are like the beasts here in Daniel chapter 7. They chew us up and they spit us out. And when they're done, they stomp on us, right? They don't have much to offer. And I think what's being communicated here is that these are also things that we're supposed to have dominion over. Right? That in an ideal world, we should be able to have dominion over these things in our lives, these beasts in our lives, these things that populate our existence. That we should be able to have control over how much of our lives we dedicate to them. And we should be able to stop ourselves from sacrificing ourselves and our children and our lives to these sorts of things, right? That just make a mess of our lives, right, eventually. And I think this is the problem that's first displayed in Daniel chapter 7. That these things in our lives that we have the ability to give ourselves to are things that we're supposed to have dominion over. But oftentimes they have dominion over us, right? Don't they? And you can think of any example in the book that you want to. The things that we are presented with in our lives, that we have the opportunity to dedicate ourselves to, very often end up taking most, if not all of us, and tear us up, spit us out, that sort of thing. And our world is full of these things, these beasts. They walk over the whole earth. That's the nature of the first part of Daniel's vision here. But then something else interesting happens. Look in verse 9. These beasts are out. They're making a mess of people's lives. They're destroying everything. And these people, they're supposed to have dominion over the beasts, right? We're supposed to have dominion and control, but they don't. They've given that up. And they've been run over. And then all of a sudden, as Daniel looked, thrones are placed, and the Ancient of Days takes his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair on his head like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out before him. 1,000,000 served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. And the court sat in judgment, and books were opened. And he looked then, because the sound of the great words of the horn were speaking, and of this beast. And as he looked, the beast was killed, and its body destroyed, and given over to be burned with fire. But something else interesting happens here. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season of time. Here we see God doing something kind of interesting. These beasts are walking around, they're destroying everything, they're destroying people's lives, they're tearing them up, spitting them out, stomping on them, and the Ancient of Days shows up. And we haven't met this character before in Daniel chapter 7, or in Daniel at all. But you have a feeling that this guy is going to, you know, to bring justice. And he does, sort of. He immediately sort of stomps on the one, and he allows the others to go. And what's happening here? When we look at this verse, it's interesting to me. We see a whole chunk of Scripture here in verse 7 that's dedicated to describing these beasts and their dominion, their reign, and their terror, right? And the way that they just stomp on everything and destroy everything. And then in half of a verse, it says the Ancient of Days shows up and the beast was killed. Right? It just happens very quickly. Like, it's not a problem at all. And this is sort of a continual theme in the Bible. We believe in a God who has control, has dominion over His world. And this is sort of unique to Christianity. I want to show you something here. Right now I'm writing my thesis, or I'm supposed to be. I'm really not, but I'm supposed to be writing my thesis. And in my thesis I'm doing comparative work between Genesis and the Enuma Elish, right? And the Enuma Elish is the Babylonian creation story. It's the story of Marduk and his creation of the world. And I want to show you something real quick. So this is, the Enuma Elish is super long, if you go. So this is part of it. And you're not supposed to be able to read it, but just to show you. What's interesting about this right here, you don't see all of that. In the Babylonian creation myth, right, this is the point at the end of that last like sentence. That's where Marduk actually starts creating the world. Isn't that funny? So all of this text right here is just like about 700 lines of this like battle that Marduk has to have with the primordial, evil, destructive, chaotic waters, right, before he can even create anything. And so, like, you have to read all of this, and you fall asleep, like, on your arm in the library reading all of this, before he starts creating anything at all. To give you a comparison, this is when God starts to create. Next slide here. That's it. And God starts creating. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void. He's sort of hovering over these chaotic waters. And darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of these waters. And God just says, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness and called the light day and the darkness night. And there's evening and there's morning on the first day. It happens so quickly. And we don't see that as significant because we really only read Genesis, but it's really significant. Because the context in which Genesis was, like, written down, finally, was a context in which there are lots of stories in which God's had to really struggle and really fight in order to be able to create anything. But here we see a God who's in complete control. He just hovers over the face of the deep, and he says, "Let there be light," and there is light. Right? God shows up here in Daniel chapter 7, and all of these beasts are powerful, and they're destroying people, and they're destroying lives, and he just shows up, and he stomps on it. Right? He puts an end to it. However, he lets the other ones go. And what are we supposed to take from this? Well, first of all, I think two things. We should know that in our world, that these sorts of beasts and things, to speak maybe metaphorically, exist. That there are things in our world that we can dedicate our lives to that will chew us up and spit us out and tear us up and destroy us. And those things still walk the earth, right? And we live in a world that's at times chaotic, right? But one thing that we should remember is that God is in complete control. When the Ancient of Days takes his seat, when he opens the books of judgment, it happens immediately. Right? These things are destroyed. These things that have caused so much trouble and so much destruction in people's lives, they're put an end to. And you can think of your own examples. You can probably think of loved ones that you've had, family members, friends, who have I don't want to say made a mess of their lives, but their lives have been made a mess of because of these sorts of things, right? These things that they dedicate their lives to. And when the Ancient of Days takes his seat, he puts a stop to them immediately. He's in complete control. We're going to look at one more thing here. And we can go to the next slide here. There's one final thing. Beginning in verse 13. "I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion, and glory, and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom is one that shall not be destroyed." Now, what I want us to look at here, it's very interesting. What I want us to look at is sort of the flow of the word dominion here. In the very beginning of Daniel chapter 7, we meet these beasts, these, like, terribly destructive, powerful things that represent the kingdoms of the earth, these things that we dedicate our lives to, and human beings, right, made in the image of God. In Genesis 1, they're supposed to have dominion over these. They're supposed to have control, but they don't. And it's the beasts that have dominion, right? And we see that in the first part of chapter 7. Right? And then, down in that second section, in verse 11, I looked because of the sound of the great word, you know, and as, the second part, as I looked, the beast was killed and his body was destroyed and burned with fire. And as for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away from them. And so the Ancient of Days shows up and he takes dominion from the beasts. But then he doesn't give it back to man. He gives it to this one who's like the Son of Man. Riding in the clouds of heaven, there came one like a Son of Man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented to him, and to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom. And what I want us to look at here is that in the latter half of verse 14, it said that this one like the Son of Man, this person that we, in our minds, equate to Jesus, he's given dominion and glory and a kingdom, right? And we're told towards the end of that verse that his dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom is one that shall not be destroyed. And perhaps we remember Nebuchadnezzar's dream from chapter 2, in which that rock is cut with no human hands, and it comes and it destroys all the kingdoms of the earth, and it grows into a massive kingdom that will not be destroyed, that will never perish from the earth. And that's a great comfort. I want you to put yourself in Daniel's shoes for a second. Daniel, when he was probably in his young teens, saw his city destroyed, saw his temple destroyed. His city caught on fire, his people killed and slaughtered, and then he was dragged miles away to be in Babylon. And he was forced to learn the laws of the Babylonians and the stories and the ways of divination and all of these. And he was forced to serve King Nebuchadnezzar. And then, towards the end of his life, the Persians come. And just like what happened back in Israel, the Persians come and they destroy parts of Babylon and they kill some of the people. And now, currently, he's working for the Persians, right? And so Daniel's been passed around. He's gotten to know people, right? He's become very close to people in his life who have later been killed, right? He's seen kingdoms rise and fall. He's seen so much destruction. And at the end of his life, he probably sits down, as we often do, and wonder, is there anything that's stable, right? Is there anything that, like, lasts? Is there anything that I can connect my life to, that I can depend on? Because what I've come to realize in life and in our world is that there's just very little that you can depend on. That we're constantly walking on a thin sheet of ice, right? And Daniel's looking for something like this. And all of a sudden here, the Ancient of Days comes and he gives dominion to the one who's like the Son of Man, who has a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And it's a kingdom that we can be a part of. But what I want you to realize, what I want all of us to realize here, is that everlasting kingdom is inseparable from Jesus' all-encompassing dominion. And the point is this, that we cannot expect to be a part of God's kingdom if we do not allow His Son to have dominion over our lives. And if I want my whole life to be a part of this kingdom that will never end, that will never fade from the face of the earth, right, that will never be destroyed, that will outlast anything, then I have to look at the parts of myself that are still rebelling against Jesus' dominion, and I have to submit myself to Him. If I want my whole life to be there, I have to make sure that my whole life is submitting to Christ. It's inseparable. If you have yet to make that decision, I want you to be thinking about this morning. And I just want to read one more thing for you here, just to give you a picture of what this kingdom looks like. Carrie sang it for us just a moment ago, but I'd like to read it for you. Psalm chapter 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in a path of righteousness for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That's what it looks like to live in this kingdom. If you are not currently a part of that, if you'd like to attach your life to Christ by putting him on in baptism, we invite you to do that by coming while we stand and sing.